Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. Sala here, got an interview coming shortly with Austin Eckroat, winner of the Cognizant Classic this year. Just played his first Masters, played at Oklahoma State, second year player out on the PGA Tour. Good to chat with him about his progression as a pro golfer, getting in the signature events, playing in his first Masters, what it's like to play Augusta, all kinds of really fun stuff in this one. Been looking forward to chatting with him for some time. We are, of course, proud to say Season 9 of Torah Sauce is presented by our longtime partners at Precision Pro Golf. New episodes premiere every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the No Laying Up YouTube channel. We traveled to Australia. We will have Episode 3 out this coming week as we make our way back to Melbourne, play St. Andrews Beach and Lonsdale Links. And you guys know about the variety of No Laying Up designs they offer for the NX10 rangefinder. They're adding another one to the mix to commemorate Torah Sauce Season 9. It's an awesome design. It's got a nod to Australia. It's got the Wayward Golfer logo on it, set on a background inspired by a jar of Vegemite. The NX10 is fast, accurate, and reliable rangefinder. All the features you would expect and the added touch of an NLU design. I love these products. They're fantastic. They're great for you. They're great for a friend or a relative or some Father's Day coming up. Start thinking about asking for a Precision Pro Golf rangefinder. If you have an older Precision Pro model like the NX7 or NX9, don't forget about their trade-up program. Returning customers get 30% off a new rangefinder purchase when upgrading to the latest and greatest Precision Pro has to offer. And code NLU at precisionprogolf.com will get you $20 off your NX10 rangefinder. Support the brands that make content like Torah Sauce possible by going to precisionprogolf.com, shopping for your next rangefinder today. And once again, use code NLU to get $20 off. Without any further delay, here's Austin Eckroat. All right, I had not seen the little docu-series you'd done for the PGA Tour called The Turn. It picks you up last fall. You're coming off a miscut at the Shriners. Hop on a plane to Japan. You don't play great in Japan. You're not playing great at the time. Could you have pictured just a few months later around that time that you'd be a PGA Tour winner and you'd be teed up in the Masters?
Yeah, it was a wild turn of events for sure. Yeah, series we did in the fall was kind of fun. You know, the got used to a camera following you around everywhere you went. Wasn't as fun whenever they were following me to the locker room on Friday afternoon after a miscut, but, you know, it was just a cool experience. And, you know, to look back and think that, you know, PGA Tour winner, like you said, and competed in the Masters, it's just been a crazy run, you know, happened quick, but couldn't be happier.
But it's interesting. A note I took away from that was, you know, we as fans, you know, we don't get to watch every golf shot, right? We, you know, you see the results and, you know, you're trying to think who's coming next, what's going on. You look at it, you see miscut, you think he's playing bad. He's playing poor.
Right.
You walked off and you were like, honestly, a positive takeaway, like adjustments I've made in my golf swing are starting to pay off, right? And then that's kind of like I'm just kind of wondering in this learning phase, and we'll zoom back up to when you win a PGA Tour event, but how do you use PGA Tour starts as a learning phase, right? Of learning this new style of golf, new competitive structure that you're playing in.
Yeah, I mean, like you're saying, like Coach Bratton, my college coach, used to always say, you know, when you're playing well, you're never that far away from, you know, struggling a little bit. That means the same thing when you're struggling. You're never that far away. You know, on camera, it'll look pretty much the same. You know, the swing, everything's there. It's just, it's a funny game. During that time period, like, the game was close. It's what I kept saying. You know, I'm close. You know, it's not
everybody
not
always says that, though. Everybody, yeah. You always hear that.
Yeah, you do hear it, but it's so true because it's just, you're on a thin line the whole time of playing good golf and playing, you know, poorly, and it's just, you know, the difference of feeling comfortable over, you know, over the ball and stuff, but the swing is never too far away. You know, obviously sometimes it is, but in that case it wasn't.
Do you, adjusting from college to PGA Tour, do you, I'm kind of wondering year by year, you know, as you've worked your way up through, through status, through the Korn Ferry Tour and all that, what do you, when you got out there and you had some starts as an amateur in tour events, if I remember right as well. As soon as you see what goes on there, do you go back to the lab and you say, all right, here's what needs to change. Here's what needs to change. Like, was there a wake up call of any kind, either from the competitive structure and the guys you're going up against or golf courses that you're playing that you were like, okay, here's what I need to succeed going forward.
Yeah. I mean, luckily I had, you know, teammates that in college that went out and had immediate success. So I kind of knew where my game stacked at that point, if they would have came out and struggled, you know, when they turned professional, I've been, I got some work to do. But, you know, I felt like I played the U.S. Open in 2019 as a sophomore in college. You know, I played some practice rounds with Dustin Johnson. I played with Rory in a practice round. I had some incredible practice round experiences. And, you know, you don't really think of those two guys as great chippers. And to watch them chip around the green, I mean, they're not considered anywhere near the best chippers, and they were incredible around the greens. And I think that's something that, you know, I've gotten a lot better at. I struggled when I first came out, was just a short game. You don't realize how close those guys hit it from, you know, very difficult spots. You know, the way they set up PGA Tour golf courses, you're going to leave yourself awkward chips all the time. And, you know, you're watching on TV and they chip it to 4 feet and you don't think anything of it, but it's a lot harder to do than it looks like.
Well, how much of that too is another thing we don't really see that well in stats is like missing in the right place. Right. I mean, right. It seems like that, you know, pins find the corners on the PGA mm-hmm. Tour. Right. And yeah. Has there been a learning curve at all in terms of just understanding your shot dispersion and where to miss?
Right. Yeah. I think, something that Mackaddy Stone and I have done a really good job over the last year is we've kind of came up with a, you know, a strategy that works for us where when we're walking a golf course, he comes up with a number, you know, on a short-sided miss on the difficulty of the chip. Basically, what's the difficulty of the up and down from the short-sided miss? Because sometimes it's not that bad and you can attack the flag, even in a, you know, if you're having a longer club in or anything. But, you know, he's got a good strategy to where he, you know, he has a, you know, it's not always right. You know, sometimes it's harder than he thought it was, but it's worked for us really well over the last year. It's kind of when we started doing it. You know, I think it's kind of limited those just unforced errors that happen out there from the short side of misses. You know, I think everybody comes up with their own little method to that. Obviously, improving the chipping helps that for sure.
Well, it seems like too, there is something to having seen tour golf courses for a year, right? Yeah. Coming back and just like, I'm sure there's still times you learn a lesson of like, gosh, I played a practice round. I wrote it down. I should have known not to be here, but now I'm here and I'll never make this mistake again.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just also the familiarity of coming back to another place. You know where player registration is when you get on site, you know where player dining is, you know where the locker room is. And it's just, you know, that first year, it's kind of stressful. You know, it's just, you don't know where you're going. You don't know where the putting green is when you get on property, you know, the little things like that you don't really, you know, think of when you're thinking of being a rookie. But obviously you can look back on past experience too. I've this year at, like I said, we're going to get into it later, but the Cognizant, for a good example, I missed the cut last year. I didn't play. I hit it in all the wrong spots. So I knew exactly where not to go going this year. So it was, you know, just simple things like that. Looking back, you know, you try not to think about all the poor shots you hit, but you know where not to go anymore. So.
Well, that's why I found that rewatch interesting, because it's a lot more weeks on tour, like that docuseries you did, are like that than people are going to know you a lot more from watching the back nine of the Cognizant. Well, it was a Monday finish. I hope people were still able to watch, but
I don't think so.
It made it challenging for us working staff that got to work through the course of the week, but. So you show up to Cognizant week, you missed the cut the week before. Mm-hmm. Is it a golf course that, you know, should, I don't know how analytic you are about stats and, mm-hmm. and course fit and things like that. Should, in your mind, should it fit your game? And did you walk off last year saying like, oh, I should play well in this place and just didn't?
Yeah. I mean, when I think of my golf game, I don't really try to think of courses that suit it. You know, I feel like when you're playing well, you're going to play well regardless of where it is. You know, looking at that golf course, it should suit my game pretty well. You have to drive it straight. You have to hit the irons pretty well. And, you know, that's what I did all week. But I love that golf course. I remember I played a junior event out there. I played it a few times before. And, you know, I really knew I liked the golf course. I played so terrible the year before. But it wasn't the golf course. It was where the status of my game was at that point. So it's just, you know, I try not to look into the analytics too much because I don't want to come in with a negative mindset going into the week. This course just does not suit my game.
That's a really good point. Did it, I guess, a long week like that rolling into Monday, you know, you're in contention the whole time, you're in the lead. Is that a good thing? Like that it's taking this long? Does it, you know, do you wake up Sunday thinking like, all right, well, or do you wake up Monday saying like, all right, well, I thought Sunday was going to be the final day. Right. Now the extra bonus day, I got some nerves out. I'm just curious if the length of that week is something that you think would maybe end up helping you.
Yeah, I think, obviously it was difficult on everybody that was trying to win. So I think I handled it well. So that kind of, I guess could have been a benefit to me. It was tough though. I mean, to sleep on a lead technically for two nights in a row. And you know, I really felt it Monday evening whenever we finished up, I was beat. It's funny. Both times I've been in contention on tour, the Byron Nelson and the Cognizant, there was rain delays and I was dealing with all that stuff. And both times on the Corn Fairy tour, I was in contention. There was a rain delay in the final round. So it's like every time I've been in that situation, I've had, you know, that experience to draw off, I guess, was, you know, having rain and having weather issues. So, it was a really cool experience, and I'll take a Monday finish every time if they go out, you know, that way. But
so see, it sounds like you like soft golf courses, right? If all of your contention is in rain delays.
Yeah, no joke.
Well, there is something too as well. Like, so much of pro golf is like, dude, you got to pick up your clubs, you got to travel, you got to like do what's right in front of you. The golf course might not be a perfect fit for you. The weather might not be what you want. Mm-hmm. The wind might not be what you want. The grass might not be what you want. You might not be on the right sleep schedule. You might not have the proper rest. But like, that's the part that the longer I cover this, watching you guys go from spot to spot, week to week, like again, watching you go Shriners to Japan, land on Tuesday, jet lag. No, you got to tee it up Thursday, man. Like, it's time. Everybody's doing it, but like, it's time. You got to go do it. Me, if one little thing is wrong, if, you know, if it's 58 degrees instead of 65, I'm in trouble. But like, you guys just pick it up and you just go.
That's what's been kind of fun. I think that was a hard part transitioning from college. Mm. You know, in amateur golf and junior golf, college golf, you don't play that many consecutive weeks in a row versus whenever you're out here, you play, you know, you'll get on a run of playing 6-7 tournaments in a row, especially as a rookie. You get kind of used to it, but it's definitely not easy. I remember I was playing, you know, that rookie category. You're the last three times out of your wave. I started to play well and you can move out of that, you know, category. And it was the week after the US Open and we were flying all the way to Connecticut. So we're traveling east and I had the first tee time at 6:10. So it felt like I teed off at like 3:10 in the morning. You know, it was just like, I flew in Sunday night, or I think Monday actually, and had Tuesday, Wednesday of prep. And then it felt like I had a 3:10 tee time on Thursday morning. So it's kind of funny how that stuff works out, but you know, you get used to it. And obviously it's just part of the job.
How do you, you know, you talked about learning some things about chipping. What did you go change anything after that? Do you work with anyone in particular? Like kind of how do you improve, you know, in your short game? And do you feel like you've made strides in your short game?
For sure. And I think statistically it says I have, you know, I think I was that first year when I was playing on sponsor exemptions. If you look at the equivalent statistics, I was pretty far back there. It was never a strike issue. You know, it wasn't an inconsistency with strikes or, you know, I caught them solid. I hit, you know, I just wouldn't hit them close. And I think it was just honestly putting in time. There's not been a whole lot of fundamental changes I've made, a couple, but nothing dramatic. And you couldn't tell the difference between 2020 and, you know, 2024 now on camera, but you know, just I'm putting in time and learning the proper shots and you know, controlling my spin better. Just the simple things that, you know, are what make all the difference when it comes to, you know, hitting it to 4 feet rather than 2 feet. That's, you know, hitting it 2 feet closer, you're making 99% of your putts versus 90. You know, it's a huge difference.
That was one of the biggest takeaways I had from reading Mark Brody's book, was like, chip it close or it doesn't matter. It may sound obvious, but like there's almost no point in chipping it to 10 feet of something. Like, no benefit. Might as well chip to 25, right? Like, over the course of time, you're not going to make that many more putts from 10 feet compared to if you're chipping it inside 5 feet, like with the difference that can make. Yeah. Which again, come back to where you're missing too, because sometimes 10 feet is a great shot from around the green. Whereas if you're chipping straight up the hill, then you're just going to be able to leave it in easier spots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just, I mean, that comes down to the course strategy, getting the proper prep in. Yeah, but that's the hard part. You don't want to overdo the prep, you know, and then be worn out on Thursday. It's just, you got to find the good balance. And that's something that, you know, I think year two on the PGA Tour, you start to figure it out. And I think that's why, you know, this season's just going a lot better than it was last season. Just, you know, the golf game's not much different. It's just understanding how to play on the PGA Tour.
The most maddening thing too about it is the good golf comes from like really boring golf and like really safe shots into greens and not like it's so frustrating. It's not the way anybody wants to play it, but it's so true. It really is.
It is. I mean, you look at the way Scottie Scheffler plays golf. It's very, very simple. Very, you know, he just hits the fairway, hits the green, makes a putt every once in a while and wins the tournament by 5 strokes.
What's it like to compete against that guy?
I've played against them for a long time. My freshman year of high school, or every year of high school, but my freshman year, we would go down to Dallas for our first two events. So he was a senior my freshman year, and I finished second to him twice in a row in those two events, and then played together for a year in college. Probably similar success. He's beat me by a couple strokes, and I had Matt and Victor on my team, so I was probably finishing fourth at best. You know, he's always been fantastic. And then, I mean, he's hit a different stride over the last, you know, 12, 18 months. So
that's what we've joked. Like, we need to come up with like more creative ways to just describe how good he is. And I'm struggling with it, but it's like, you ask any pro like yourself about it too. It's just kind of like, yeah, man, it's really hard to describe. It's really this next level though. I mean, he's gotten that appreciation. Mm-hmm. Almost no people at your level almost don't want to admit it. Of like, yeah, right. I don't know how we're going to beat that guy.
Well, it's just crazy. I mean, I didn't think he was playing RBC just because I had seen the coverage and, you know, Meredith was close to having a baby. And then I see Ted Scott on 9 fairway. I'm playing my practice round. He's just walking the golf course. I'm like, what the hell is he doing out here? Now we're playing for second. Sick. No, I'm just kidding. But it was funny that week too because he got off to a slow start. I think he shot, you know, around par the first round and nowhere in the lead. And then next thing you know, 4 rounds later, he's just, you know, holding up another trophy. But like we were talking about, he's doing it in a simple way. It's not like he's doing anything outrageous. He's not, you know, hitting it to a foot on every hole. He's just, you know, hitting the fairway, hitting the green, and making a putt every once in a while. That's how you play good golf.
Can you glean anything from that? Right. I mean, cause he doesn't possess like overly physical, like the way Tiger did it was just a way of like, dude, no one else has that. Right. And
right.
The way Scotty, I don't get that impression that people feel that way about Scotty. Like, can you glean anything even at your level from somebody that's outperforming everybody right now at a totally different pace?
I kind of think that's what's so impressive. It's not like he's doing something that much better than everybody else. You know, he's not hitting it way longer than everybody. He's not dominant in any one category. He's just very good at everything. He does everything right. He doesn't make the mistakes that other guys are making. I mean, you're playing 4 rounds in a row. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to hit it in poor spots, and he's just not doing it. And it's so incredible. I mean, it's, you know, you look back on the week and it's just, you know, he's at 22 under and the rest of the golf course was playing to 17 under. It's incredible.
The one that blew my mind was over the past 3, 6 and 12 months, he is first in strokes gained off the tee, approach and around the green. Over any period of time, in all three things that aren't putting, he's number one over any stretch of time. Like, it's just.
And now he's starting to putt good too.
I know. It's scary.
It's getting a little scary.
No Laying Up is sponsored by FanDuel. Whether you're playing golf or betting on it, there's nothing worse than first tee jitters. But with FanDuel, you can crush your first bet off the tee. Because right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed with any $5 bet. That's $150 win or lose. A lot of great opportunities this coming week for the Byron Nelson CJ Cup at the Byron Nelson. I forget what it's called now, but you can go for the green all PGA Tour season long. Bets like longest drive, closest to the pin, outright winners, all kinds of top 10, 20, blah, blah, blah plays. They got a tremendous golf offering. They got women's golf. They got majors. They got Grand Slam odds, all kinds of great stuff. FanDuel.com/NLU. Hit your first bet right down the middle of the fairway with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. FanDuel, an official betting operator of the PGA Tour. Must be 21 and older, 18 and older in D.C. and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Back to Austin Eckrode. I've heard guys say things like they're more nervous on a Friday near the cut line than they are on the back nine when they're in contention. Now that, you know, you were in contention, you finished second at the Byron Nelson in 2023. You obviously won the Cognizant this year. Can you add any perspective into that? Because the color I hear is like, yeah, you're playing well, obviously, when you're in contention, and you don't get as nervous, but kind of compare the nerves of what that's like. Cause on TV, sometimes it doesn't look like you guys are nervous.
Yeah, I've always thought Friday afternoons are the most stressful day, you know, in professional golf. Saturday morning, you wake up and it's like, you know, you get a nice relaxing round. You know, you can just go play golf. Especially that rookie year, I'd say, you know, more so for me this year, I've been a little bit more relaxed on those Fridays just because you know how important those points are. You need to make that cut your first year. You need to, you know, now I've got a win under my belt, I think, you know, I'm able to take on more risk on Thursday, Friday. I can just try to go win golf tournaments now because I have, you know, status locked up. it's a lot easier to birdie your last hole to win a golf tournament, I think, than it is to birdie your last hole to make a cut. Because, one, you're playing great if you're leading a golf tournament and your game's in a good spot, versus where, you know, when you're fighting on that cut line, something's off. You know, it's not – the game's not perfect that week, you know, but it doesn't mean you can't have a good week. But something doesn't feel great. So, it's – I mean, making a birdie on the last hole to make a cut is always always so difficult. And it's just a – you know, it's just a stressful position to be in, you know, battling the cut line. You know, I think a good example is last week, Chris Goddard and I played the Zurich Classic together, made the cut on the number. I missed a little dinker on the ninth hole for us to fall to 8 under. And then, you know, we ended up having a good weekend and finished 11th place. You know, it's just, you know, if you make the cut, you know, you're in a, you're, you have a chance to have a good week. And it's just, Fridays are just stressful.
I'll say, is there anything too? I remember Brooks having a quote way back in the day of like, when I was like, trying to make cuts, I was right around the cut line. When I was trying to top 25, I was right around top 25. When I was trying to top 10, I was right around top 10. Like, is there an evolution at all for you of like, I just heard you say like Fridays are the most stressful. Like, to me, that sounds like, oh gosh, I am thinking about the cut when I tee it up first day.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you know your game's in a good spot, you're going to the week trying to win it, you know? And then, but what's funny about professional golf too, it's, I remember playing a, I could play the Mayakoba, the Worldwide Technologies event as a senior in high school, or senior in college, sorry, not high school. I was in like 10th place on Thursday, but I was only 2 shots ahead of the cut line. And it was like, that golf course is super narrow. And this was like one of my first experiences playing professional golf. And that golf course is super narrow with, if you miss it offline, it's lost ball, it's gone forever. And it's like, man, I'm one bad swing away from not playing on Saturday. It's, you know, but you got to figure out a way to not think about that stuff. And like I said, I think this season, having the win under my belt now, it's just, you know, I'm not as stressed out on Friday afternoons just because I'm going to be okay if I miss the cut. You know, it's just a different mindset, I think.
How long, at what point are you thinking about all that comes with a PGA Tour win, right? And what's like, what is the number one thing, right? What's, when you go sign that car, when you make that final putt, are you like, oh, I'm in the Masters, oh, 2-year exemption, oh, I'm in signature event. Like what is the thing that you're like, holy crap, this comes with a win, now let's go?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the job security. I have, you know, the rest of the season, 2 years after that, that was kind of the biggest thing, you know, especially just being young on the PGA Tour. It's just, there's no, you know, guarantees in this line of work.
And everybody says this, like people don't have like the appreciation for how hard it is just to keep your card every year. Like, you're an injury away from all of a sudden being on medical, a couple months of bad swinging away from like wondering if you're going to stay exempt. Like, it's so freaking competitive for those spots.
Yeah. So I played golf with some of the, you know, veterans out here. I played with Lucas Glover and Stuart Sink in San Antonio a couple of weeks ago. And Lucas Glover's played like, he's made like over 500 cuts on the PGA Tour. It's like, he's been on tour for over 20 years. When I think of stuff like that, that's so impressive, you know, to have a career that's that long. Obviously he's won a few times and, you know, that's given him status, you know, guaranteed, but to maintain status for 20 years and competitive for that long, I mean, it's so, that's, you know, just as impressive as a lot of other things, I think, that, you know, but it doesn't get a whole lot of recognition for sure.
Last thing before we get to the Masters is what you mentioned, some adjustments you made to your golf swing, like from, you know, the numbers show out in terms of off the tee you've gained, approach game you've gained. What are the specific adjustments and kind of what's the process like of, I've got status, yet at the same time, I want to make some changes to my golf swing and try to compete better. How do you go about that? Because I'm fascinated with the tug and the pull of those relationships.
Yeah. When I first you know, turned professional, you know, I was kind of a higher swing speed guy than I am now. I was probably at 119 club speed, you know, 178 ball speed in that range. If I pushed, I could get 120, 180. And then, you know, I just played so much. I wasn't focusing a whole lot on my body. You know, I was just, you know, mainly focusing on golf, and I just kept getting slower and slower and slower. You know, I got to a point last season where, you know, I was swinging at 112 miles an hour with my driver and pushing barely 170 ball speed every once in a while, and that just makes the game so much harder. You know, there was some errors in my swing, the body wasn't feeling great, and I think this season, you know, starting back to, you know, the end of last season, I really started putting a focus on my body, and the speeds have been jumping back up slowly. I'm getting closer to where I was. Obviously there's been some fundamental changes I've made, but nothing really that serious. It's just, you know, with my body feeling better, I'm able to, you know, get in the positions that I, you know, are able to create some power from. The driving stats have gone up. I think even last season with hitting slower swing speeds, I've always been a straight driver of the ball, and I was still a pretty good driver on tour. Struggled with the irons a lot last season. To see that stat kind of coming back, that's always been my strongest point of my game. It's been, you know, ball striking. And, you know, I think with that coming back, it's been a huge benefit to my game for sure.
When you say take better care of your body, what's kind of the split there between, say, flexibility and strength, mm-hmm. right? It's I'm guessing it's not just doing curls in the gym. Like, what's the relationship with how you've taken better care of your body, like translating to swing speed?
Yeah, I mean, one, I got back into the gym, so some more curls were being done, but that's not the main focus. Yeah, I think that's something that was great about college is we had such a structured program. You know, we had, when we were at home, we had, but you have to go. There's no, you know, we're required to go. Then you turn professional, it's all on your own, you know, and it's easy to start getting a little lazy when it comes to that stuff. But yeah, a lot of flexibility work, a lot of strengthening with mobility, but then also just a lot of just your traditional lifting coming back. You know, something I always did. And I think that, you know, the strength itself is a huge improvement for speed. And then also just the flexibility. I went and worked with Greg Rose at the TPI facility, and we did some evaluations, and just to see where my body had, you know, started to get really tight. I had no mobility in my thoracic spine, no mobility in my right ankle, no mobility in my right hip, no mobility in my right shoulder. I had no mobility last season in the right side of my body. And we were able to kind of diagnose that and come up with a program to improve that. And a month later, I won the Cognizant after seeing him. So it was pretty cool. I've got a team around me now, and we've got a good program. And it's funny. So the recovery trailers and the workout trailers on tour that we have, and we have access to them, and they're fantastic. The first time I ever used them was at the Byron Nelson last year. And that was when I finished second. So I've been taking advantage of all the stuff we have now. But when I first got out there, I was not. I was just, you know, trying to figure out how to hit the golf ball further without doing anything about it.
Well, a few of our guys just did the TPI thing like a couple weeks ago and came back just raving about it. 4 days later, they're awesome. Like, my glutes are still sore, and I learned about all my deficiencies. Everything you just described, I laugh because it's like, oh yeah, wait till you get to your 37, man. Like, there's a lot less hip mobility going on this side of the microphone. So I can relate to that at least a little bit. But gosh, that's incredible that the payoffs were that quick. And it's got to be good for endurance too. I mean, in terms mm-hmm. of like just weariness from the road and energy to last all these weeks long. Like, dude, I come home from covering one of your guys' events, and I'm like a ghost the next week. I'm so exhausted. Like, how you guys pick up and go and compete again the next week, and then the next week is what remains. Have you learned much about that in terms of, all right, if I'm playing this many consecutive, I'm taking this day off, even if I'm in town for this event, I'm not going to do anything. Have you learned anything about that?
Yeah, most of the time I take Monday off.
Yeah.
You know, when I get to a new event, unless I feel like I need to work on something, maybe I'll go out and hit some putts. But, you know, for the most part, I take Monday off. I just got off a run of four in a row, and I mean, it beats you down. I think there was a stretch last season where I maybe did 10 in a row, and it's a beat down if you play that much golf. You know, you don't think of golf as that much of a strenuous sport, but just the travel and the wake up times is something that I think's kind of not spoke about. Is, you know, one day you're teeing off at 1 o'clock, the next day you tee off at 7:15, and you know, you got that 4 o'clock wake up call, and the day before you could sleep in till 9:30 if you wanted to. And it's just I think the inconsistency in your sleep schedule and all that stuff, it wears you down a little bit. So I think like this week I'm taking off. It's just every now and then you gotta take one off, and it sucks.
Finished second here last year. Yeah,
I know. I was talking to Lee Hodges about that. We were playing together. I forget where we were at, but he said, I was like, we were talking about the schedule, and if I played this week, it'd been 9 in a row. I'm splitting up a 2-4-week run right now. I was like, man, but I really want to play Byron Nelson because I finished second there last year. He's like, let me give you some advice. Just because you played well there in the past does not mean you're going to play well there again. And I was like, you know what? It's a good point. So he said, I've done that before, and when I'm 3 shots outside the cut line on Friday afternoon, I was like, why the hell did I play this week? But
that's the worst place you can be, is kind of half in, half out, and then playing bad of like, oh man, I just wasted so much energy with this. But so tell me about your first Masters. You win in February, do you make an advance trip there? Had you been to Augusta? Yeah. Have you played it before? Like kind of tell me about your preparation process. And I'm curious if you fell in the trap of playing too many practice rounds at your first Masters, like a lot of people do.
Yeah, so after I won, I think I took off Houston and I went to Augusta National and played two practice rounds. That was my first time on property was that time. And, you know, it's an incredible place. It truly is, you know, one of the most surreal feelings when you walk on property. So when I got to the week of the Masters, I at least had the, you know, the familiarity of being to a place I'd been to, kind of like, you know, the comfort level of, like I was talking about on year two on the PGA Tour. I didn't wear myself out. I played 9-9-9. I did good of going 9-9-9 because I had heard of guys, you know, a lot of people told me don't overdo it.
The energy's so high. Like there's so many fans so out there and like you just, it looks like the most fun thing ever. You just want to play like 36 if you could.
It's interesting on like Monday, you're there. They sell the same amount of tickets every day. You know, it's just, it's like a tournament. And what's, I mean, on Monday I'm used to, you know, if I hit a terrible shot, you know, if I want to try out a new swing key for the week on the golf course, I feel comfortable doing it. If I hit the tree 100 yards off the tee, that's all right. But there, it feels like you got to hit good shots all week because there's people there watching. And, you know, it's just a different, it's so cool though. And I'm real. I mean, I played so bad just the whole week. It wasn't like you know, the golf course was too difficult for me. I just played terrible and it was just kind of sucked because it was such a cool experience and I wanted to play well so bad. But, you know, I think that was part of the, you know, there was a fundamental issue that going into that week, I was able to manage it in the lower stress moments, but then I think kind of, you know, the anxiety of playing the Masters, and I think just kind of exposed that flaw that I had. And I was able to kind of get some work done on the week before, or, you know, on Sunday when I left, and I ended up playing really well at Hilton Head the next week. It's a funny game. And, you know, it's kind of, I feel like the whole week of the Masters kind of feels like you're playing the final round in the lead. You know, driving to the golf course, I had that, you know, kind of not pit in my stomach, but, you know, that little anxiety driving to the golf course just because, you know, I'm playing the first round at Masters. I'm playing on Saturday at the Masters. It's just or not Saturday, I didn't get to play, but Friday at the Masters.
You missed by one. You didn't play that bad.
Oh, it felt like I missed by 100. I chipped it so good. I hit it terrible and putted it terrible, but the chipping kind of gave me a chance, so.
It looks like so much fun to play. I know you didn't play well, but like it honestly looks like peak fun you could have in competitive golf. Even not playing your best, would you classify it as fun?
Oh yeah, I had a great time. Yeah. And it's so interesting how you can, it's unlike anything we play. Like you can get yourself out of position, but then there's this mound over here somewhere way far away that you can kind of bring it in there and give yourself a chance. I mean, it's so different than our typical golf that we play. You know, I'd heard about how much slope there is out there and how, you know, TV doesn't do that justice. So I came in with the mindset of that. So I wasn't so much surprised by that, but I was shocked when I got on the greens. I mean, I've never seen that much slope on a green in my entire life. And that's every hole. And then you get to hole 12 and it's dead flat. It's interesting how it's just, you know, you get on hole one, it's like, man, if I hit this beyond the hole by 20 feet long right to the front left pin, that looks like it's right where you want to hit it. But now I've got a putt that I'm playing 12 feet outside right, break and straight downhill once it breaks. I mean, I think that's the most difficult part about that golf course is the, you know, obviously people talk about how small the landing zones are, because if you miss the landing zone and you're still on the green, well, you're still out of position. It's so cool.
That's what, I've, you know, obviously watched a ton of Masters, and I was fortunate enough this year. I won the lottery to get to play the course on the Monday afterward. And it was so the Sunday pin was the left side on the third green, and I was way out of position off the tee, but like could barely get one on to the right side of the green. And I had this putt that I was like, I've never seen this before anywhere. Right. Like, and, you know, like you've played greens that tilt from back to front. I've never played one that tilted from right to left that hard. And just had these elements of you know, I don't know how to describe it other than like every hole you finished, you're almost like, I want to do it again because I would know if I was 10 yards further left in this spot, I could hit it here. And I'm hitting back up the slope and all of this. And it was like, even only playing it once was like, holy crap, this is what everyone talks about with like learning this golf course and seeing it in competition and like why the first timers don't win. Like all of it like came to fruition in just one round of like, this is exactly why. And it felt fun too. It's like the best way of getting your ass kicked.
Yeah, like I think three greens, so cool how that front left section, it's slopes so hard right to left, you know, if you're right at the pin, it's straight downhill. But then also that's a little turtle shell right there too. Like if you get it too far right, then it starts breaking away. I think so crazy about that place and so cool is you can hit a putt that is 3 inches from being a tap in and you can just completely embarrass yourself if it goes on the other three on the other side because it'll start breaking the other way. It's what I think is awesome too is like on a par fives, if you're out of position, you have to lay up. Like how the fairways are huge on the layup options, like 13 and 15, you've got 100 yards, but you have to hit it into the small sliver to have a chance to go out the pin. You know, like on 15 to that you know, that center pin, you try to lay it up as far left as you can get it as close to those grandstands on the left side. But the other time you're aiming 100 yards right of that to the right side of the fairway to get the angle into the left pins. It's such a cool place because it's kind of wide, but it plays so small.
People go, I already did a 2-hour podcast talking about my whole round, but it was like the shot I spent the most time on was I was in the left trees on 15 and figuring out where to lay it up. And I ended up playing it. I had that Sunday pin. I played it down the left and it left it in this awesome spot. I'm looking right up it. But then it was like, all right, if I overspin this, it's coming back in the water. And the water, if I don't get the spin I'm expecting, it might go long onto that back fringe and it's not coming back. And that's death. And it's just.
And then you're chipping it in the water.
Exactly. It's just like, holy crap, the layers upon layers of that place. And, but you can also see like guys like Tiger that have learned their way around it and know how to play the slopes and know it like the back of their hand and know all four pin positions and know where to miss to all four, you know, with just this. It's etched in your memory. You can totally see how you can just gain, you can be a horse for course for that place.
For sure. Yeah. And it's interesting. Like we have the same exact yardage book. The same guy makes our yardage book every week, you know, so we get really comfortable with how our yardage book layout is. You know, we got, it takes me 2 seconds to get the number to the front of the grain into the hole and where the slope is, you know, every week on tour. And you get there and the yardage book is very minimal. There's not a whole lot of information on it. There's no slope, you know, there's no adjustment for anything. And, you know, you don't get lines off the tee. There's no run out lines. It's just, you get this book with not much information. It's kind of your job to kind of, I think, keep the same book over the years and just make sure you have all the same information and get your run out lines and get, you know, past experience on that book. Cause that book is, this doesn't have much.
Well, and then it's also another layer of, you tell me, do you guys practice this stuff or do you have this information? I'm like, all right, the shot into nine, if I'll off the downslope, it's coming out of a different window. Is it going farther? Because it's going also going uphill. Shot into two.
Yeah.
If it's launching lower, is it going to carry farther? Is that going to all of this? And hey, if you're wrong by just a couple yards, you're on the wrong tier of the green and you're toast. Like that's, it's such an exact science.
Someone asked me about, you know, when I went and played those two rounds before during the week of Houston was, what was my like take on the golf course? And I thought there was probably 4 or 5 holes that were exactly what I thought they were. And then the rest of them were completely different than I thought. And hole 9 was definitely one of them. It's shocking how much that green sits at like, you know, this angle. It's not, it kind of just looks like you're hitting up a hill on TV. You know, that those bunkers are kind of left. No, you're taking it over those bunkers off a cut downhill lie. The green that wants to take a draw, you know, it's just, it's the perfect design. It's
and then added, you guys were playing 40-mile-an-hour winds in it too. Yeah. Like, that was just,
I had a constant sandstorm on 18 when I was putting out. It was just blowing straight in my face.
Everything up at that top spot, 9 and 18 and then 10 and one tees was just like, holy, I know they did a great job on TV, like illustrating how much the wind was blowing. But even then people's hats were flying off. I mean, it was, I've never seen anything at a golf tournament I've attended in person. I've never seen wind like that. It was insane.
Yeah. We were talking about, I live in Oklahoma. I mean, we get wind and I was telling Stone whenever we were playing on Friday, I was like, I think if I was at home, I probably would have taken today off. Like, I think this is borderline too much wind to where I wouldn't have gone and even played.
So is it, you know, with the win, now you've played in a Masters, I'm wondering do your goals change like for the rest of the year? Like, do you have, is there anything that's dangling that you're like, all right, if I get this, the rest of this year is going to be pretty good. I might have a guess as to what that might be, but what would that be?
I kind of got two things that I really, really want to do. I want to make East Lake, you know, that's kind of, and then.
You're 30th right now for the listeners.
Yeah, I'm on the number. I'm the bubble guy right now. I think it'd be really cool to play the President's Cup, obviously. I think last Ryder Cup kind of maybe helped that case somehow, you know, taking a young guy that doesn't have a whole lot of experience. You know, the European team did that and they had a lot of success. And I hope, you know, kind of you know, for my sake, I hope they kind of have the same mindset this season. And getting involved in those team events seems so fun.
What were your opinions on the signature events, both before you were in them and now that you're in them? What's your opinion on them?
Yeah, it's changed. It's funny. I mean, I was kind of against them whenever, you know, I was on the outside, just because, you know, it seemed like if you were in them, how can you lose your card? How can you do any, you know, there's more points, there's more, you know, all that stuff. And now, obviously, when I'm in them, hey, I love them. They're great. But, you know, I was kind of always where, you know, I think obviously play for more money. That's fine. No big deal. I was just upset with how many more points they got, you know, just for those events. But now that I've played in a couple, I mean, they're so competitive. There's, you know, it is the top 70 players in the world. I mean, they're like, I played pretty well at, we were talking about it in Hilton Head, and I finished 17th, I think. And I was like, man, I felt like I played kind of like I would have finished 17th in a full field event with a full 156 person field. I still felt like that's kind of what I would have finished. You know, you're just playing against the best players in the world, and it's hard. Obviously not too hard for Scotty, but hard.
I was going to say your case though, almost it makes kind of my position on it feel a little stronger, and that like, hey, play good golf, you can get in them. Right. I mean, like almost every, the part that makes it hard is their sponsors exemptions. So a few sponsors exemptions. Yeah. Other than that, you'd say like, it's not a popularity contest.
No.
It's, if you played great last year and you're in the top 50, you get into all these events the next year. And you know, they've modeled it out. We'll see what it ends up shaking out at as to how many people fall out, how many people get in. But it would be a problem if you guys like you that didn't have great weeks and play their way into them were not able to get up into them and compete in them. And if it was,
they're still giving out, what is it, 15 spots every event for the guys who are playing well that season. That's a lot of spots.
Yeah.
You know, you got is it the next 10 and then the swing five? Is that, I think that's how they phrase it. And
you tell know, me, I'm confused. That sounds right.
I think that's how it is. I think there's 10 spots for the next 10 guys on the FedEx Cup. And then there's five guys from the most recent events, you know, so, you know, there's still a way into them. And if you're playing well, you're going to get into them. And, but they're really fun, and the events really, really are taking good care of the players. And I mean, it is the best players in the world.
Again, this stuff is new to you, and you're kind of entering a changing landscape here, but the equity that was just doled out to PGA Tour players and kind of this dangle that's out there now to say like $100 million is going to go out annually to 20 guys and the opportunities for future ownership of PGA Tour enterprises. You're young, so if that stuff is you know, maybe not, I don't want to say over your head, but not on your radar.
Is.
Okay. I was going to say, like, is it on your radar at all? Or are you just like, dude, let me just play golf. We'll figure the rest out.
I've been that way this whole time period, really. Just, you know, just play golf. It's over my head. I can understand it, but, you know, I don't think it's, you know, I don't want it to be my main focus, you know, going out there. I just, when I get to play well. That's kind of always what we said whenever I had conditional status on the Corn Ferry Tour 2 seasons ago was, you know, if I get an opportunity to go play well. And I've just kind of kept that same mindset. Obviously there's a lot of great things going on, you know, more money being involved in the game. And, you know, luckily I'm in a time where I'm going to benefit that. And, the better I play, the more, whatever, you know, I'll gain more. And that's, you know, just kind of keeping that same mindset though, for, you know, put my head down and play well, it'll work out okay.
I always wondered this, like, of how old are you? Are you 25? You're 25.
25.
Yeah. Like if I'd have had $1 million, million plus bucks hit my bank account at age 25, I'd have done some dumb stuff. I just would have. What is it like to have, you know, so early on in your career, just like have financial success? Does it change anything about your lifestyle? I'm just always curious how that works for young guys.
Not really. I mean, it's probably a benefit that I was playing the next week and the next week after that to where I didn't, you know, as soon as I finished and when I won, I went straight to, I drove Monday evening to, Arnold Palmer. And then, you know, I wasn't in the Wednesday Pro-Am, so I had to play 18 holes on Tuesday to see the golf course. So it was, and then it was just a beat down that week. That golf course is so hard. And then I went to the Players Championship. So it was like, never really had a moment for it to sink in. When I got home, the golf club I play at, Oak Tree National, had a party for me, and it was like, it almost felt a little too late, you know, at that point, but it was still fun. But, I think that, you know, obviously it's great to play a sport and to have it be, you know, my income and be the way that, you know, support my family and stuff. It's cool. And and all, but I try not to focus on that aspect too much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's probably the most certainly the right mindset. But what's something that surprised you about tour life? I want you to give me one on course thing, one off course thing of something that you maybe just didn't know about tour life. Kind of putting you on the spot with this, but I'm sure you can come up with something.
On the golf course, I'd probably say, man, I have no idea, man. On the golf
course. You kind of answered it earlier with surprise. The chipping, like some of the chipping
stuff.
Yeah,
I'd say chipping. Yeah, if I was talking about just like the skill level of the guys, and I'd say main thing is, you know, how many different games there are.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of guys, like, you know, when you're playing college golf, you think everybody on PGA Tour just stripes the, you know, absolute shit out of it. And they just, you know, a lot of guys don't. And they're just good. They just manage their way around the golf course and, you know, they hit it good enough and they chip it good enough and putt it good enough. And it's, I'd say that's what I was more surprised about, is just how many different levels of the game of golf there are and that we all shoot the same scores. Someone excels in this, someone excels in something else. And, you know, there's just so many different ways to do it. And then, especially with distance too, there's guys hitting it so far. And then there's guys that just aren't very long, but they're really good with their long irons. And they, yeah, it's just a, there's so many ways to play this game.
Do you ever get tempted by other people's styles of like, gosh, I'm making this, he does this way more simple.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, I'm trying to flush everything here, but he's kind of slapping it around. I've heard of guys going through that in early years too, of like just almost imposter syndrome of other playing styles.
Yeah. I was doing at Hilton Head. I was hanging out with Lucas Glover and he said, we're all just a bunch of copycats. And it's so true. And I kind of struggled with that last season where I kind of like to work the ball both ways and hit it, you know, hit up, bring the flight up, bring the flight down, try to hit a shot every time. And then you'll play with a guy that just cuts it every single time, you know, only hits cuts. And I'm like, then I start thinking, man, am I going to be more consistent if I just start hitting one ball flight? And then, you know, then I'll try it out and, you know, play well or play terrible. But then, you know, kind of go back to the idea that we all do it our own way. But I think Lucas Glover is exactly right. You know, we're all a bunch of copycats. You know, you'll see some guy doing some drill on the putting green, and next thing you know, you'll see three guys doing it the next week because that guy played well. It's pretty funny. I'm trying to think of my off the golf course thing that surprised me. I mean, obviously the travel. I just have to go, you know, growing up, college golf, you played every once in a while. And like I was saying earlier, amateur golf, you play every once in a while, and then you play 4 weeks in a row, and your job starts Monday. It's not like we start on Thursday when the tournament starts. So it's a full week event. And
does your wife travel with you too?
She goes to probably 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
Or I mean, she's there pretty much every week, and she's on the tour wives board now. She's full in now.
Well, that's another just element too of just arranging travel for two people when you got to change a flight, two people, and go to a Monday finish, everything like it is I know they got people that'll help with those kind of things, but that's stuff that you know, people don't really think about that often. But
right,
what kind of working backwards here? We didn't really start with background. We had so much recent stuff for you to cover, but kind of give me an idea of how you ended up at Oklahoma State and kind of what your junior career was like. And I know a lot of people, you know you from those famous Oklahoma State teams and who you played with on those teams, but kind of the path to getting there. And I'm curious kind of what that team environment was like to and contributed towards your pro success.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I grew up an Oklahoma State fan. Me and my dad used to go to pretty much every football game growing up and would go to the, you know, every time Oklahoma State hosted a regional or something like that, we'd go to the event. You know, I always wanted to play there, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to be good enough to go and play. And then also to have great teams when I was there was just awesome. We had a really, really close team. Matt Wolf and I were best friends and still are now. And, you know, Victor and I are really close. Zach Boshman and I play golf together pretty much every day on my own. Chris Ventura, I haven't stayed as much in touch with as I'd like, but he's in Florida and I'm in Oklahoma. So Sam Stevens, who's now on the PGA Tour. And, you know, we got several guys on the Corn Ferry Tour right now trying to battle it out. And one of my teammates is now the assistant coach at Oklahoma State. I've got them all over the place. And luckily I've stayed in touch with most of them, but we're all trying to do our own thing. We're playing all across the world right now. And, you know, got guys on the Challenge Tour, Deep World Tour, you know, Live Golf, PGA Tour. It's just that team was incredible, and it was just such a fun experience to be around. I had two great golf coaches, and for us to win the national championship in 2018 at home was one of the, you know, still probably the highlight of my golf career so far. It was just because it's such a cool environment winning with your boys and, you know, just and at home with everybody watching. It was so cool.
Well, yeah, it's wild too. Just thinking, yeah, I was curious to ask, like, if you're playing with Matt and Victor in college, mm-hmm. obviously, and seeing them, like, you beat them plenty of times, and yeah. but if you end up as the number, kind of the number three guy, I guess, behind those two, there's an element of them raising your level of play and competitive. Right. You see this day in and day out, or at the same time, like, is it discouraging at all to see these freak talents right directly next to you the whole time? I'm wondering what that kind of relationship was like.
I think for me, I've always felt like I was just one step behind. Like, I wasn't far. I was just one step behind. And I knew that once I made that jump, I could, be doing what they're doing. And I think a big comfort to me too, after my sophomore year, when they both turned professional, was their immediate success. If they would have gone out and struggled and they were clearly better than I was in college, I would have been, I would have, like, I think I had mentioned it earlier, but I would have been like, man, I got some serious work to do. But to see them go and have immediate success, and I knew my game was close to theirs, and I just needed to make, a couple small steps, and I would have been there. And, that was a huge comfort level for me, because I knew I could do what they were doing, and it just, but to see them have success was the comfort level for sure. But, like, as you were asking, the beatdown was getting annoying for sure. I think my sophomore season, I think Victor won 4 times, Matt won 6 times, and I won once. And I won once, and Victor wasn't playing that week. So Matt finished second, though, so I did beat Matt.
At that age, phase of like kind of golf development, are you learning things specifically from them? I know it's the PGA Tour's copycats, like, and I'm just kind of curious as to what, for me personally, like, playing with good players is just mm-hmm. totally transformed my game over the course of a 2-year period of just, like, when you watch three dudes just hit these stripes, your instinct is just like, okay, I'm gonna go do that, versus there is something to golf of playing down to your competition. And I'm curious kind of what some of those things you would have either learned or gleaned from them in those times.
Yeah. Hey, it was fun too, because they did it a different way.
Yeah.
Two very unique golf swings. One, they had, Matt's the big loop and hits it a mile. And then you got Victor, who was just, very consistent and hit it. He hits it further now than he did then. He's continued getting longer and longer. Cool to see, like, what I was talking about earlier on the PGA Tour is, there's two, they had two completely different ways of doing it, and we're doing it really well. And then, I did it a different way from them as well. And, but you learn a lot from playing with them. Just, yeah, like you said, you play up to your competition and you play down to your competition. It seems like, I've gotten in several match play scenarios where it turns into a pillow fight pretty quickly because we're both playing poorly. Yeah. But, if you get in a match play situation, both guys are 6 under, you're just going crazy and winning and making birdies. But I think every day going out, we, play little matches, and, that was such a big benefit for me for sure.
I've heard you be described as a very confident person, but has no ego. I'm wondering what your relationship is with like the mental side of golf, like a sport that will beat you down this hard.
Yeah.
How do you stay confident, and kind of what your relationship is with confidence, and how that leads and breeds to good play?
Right. That's a cool, that was a cool explanation, but describing feature. That's I think with golf, I've got a pretty good mindset, and I think I've got a good head on my shoulders. I've never really been a guy who loses my mind out there or gets too up. I'm never too high, never too low. And I think with the confidence level, I think, I put in the time, I practice, I really feel like I put in the proper, work ethic and preparation, and I'm able to get out to a tournament and know that I've done the work now. It's just, now I just got to perform. I've always felt comfortable in the situation of being under pressure. I think that's whenever you lean back to that preparation and all that stuff, and me just not ever losing my cool out there really keeps me in that same mindset. But I'm that way in every aspect of life too. I rarely ever get mad, and I think that's kind of a benefit towards, my mental state all around. But, on the same side, I never get too up. So just really mellow out there, keep it calm. And I think it's cringy when guys throw fist pumps unless they're winning, but stuff like that. So just different stuff. But
well, tell me about Stone. Your caddy, as I understand it, a long time best friend. As I also understand it, Stone is his real actual name.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Stone and I have been best friends for probably upwards of 10 years now, 12 years now. And it's funny how it worked out. We never planned on him caddying for me. It was just, he caddied for me every once in a while in amateur events. And then I played Mayakoba that I brought up earlier in my senior year of college, and asked if he wanted to caddy, and we finished 12th. So, you know, I was like, oh, maybe we should consider doing this. You know, it's been a really fun journey. I mean, golf's a lonely sport, especially if you don't have anybody out there with you. But, you know, my wife travels, like I said, 9 out of 10 weeks, and I got my best friend on the bag, and my dad's my swing coach. So it's just a full blown, I think it's huge for me just with having people around me that I trust and that are supporting me 100%. And, you know, Stone and I have got a great relationship. He's might be y'all's biggest fan of the No Laying Up podcast. He, whenever we, I think we were at Pebble Beach, and we were, I think he saw you at Pebble Beach, maybe in 2021 or 2022. Were you guys out there by chance?
I was there last year. I played 2023, and we were here. We were there this year.
I wasn't there in 2023. Maybe it was. It might have been a different tournament. Okay. I forget where it was, but he was nervous. He saw you guys and got nervous. He was going to say something. Couldn't do it. And I was like, dude, you're around celebrities all day long. Like, we play pro-ams. He's like, yeah, but like, I listen to those guys all the time. So it's pretty funny. And you guys are the only guys that ever made him nervous. So.
I don't know how that makes me feel. That makes me feel a little uncomfortable. But tell us about Sally too. You guys are, as I understand, you've known each other for a very, very, very long time. Reconnected later in life. Is that right?
Yeah. So Sally and I.
Later in life. You're 25. Up. There is no later in life.
Later in life. Yeah. No. So we went to the same. It's like Mother's Day out. You know, when we're under 2 years old.
Yeah.
And, our families were really close. We stayed in touch till we were, you know, 9 or 10. Stuff happens. You know, they moved cities, and I went to public school, went to school in Edmond, and you know, our family just kind of grew apart. Nothing bad happened, just, you know, growing up.
Sure.
And we hadn't talked for 10 years or so, and we rekindled between sophomore and junior year of college, and pretty quickly we kind of realized that, you know, this was going somewhere. And like I said, a blessing to have her with me the whole time, just because it's a lonely journey, and she's the best. And it's just been a really fun journey for us too.
Fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you spending your one off week with us. You here as you, as you get ramped up for four more, and we are appreciative of, or congratulations, I guess, on all your success, and keep it going, man. It's exciting to watch. And at least we know not to follow any course history for you, for anyone else that's trying to, you've always been in a lot of my picks as we've made over the years. I never know when you're going to play well. It's good to know also.
It's just all over.
You don't know. You don't know either. So
I don't know either.
That's one takeaway I'll have, but
we make the joke a lot. I'm either going to have it or I'm not going to have it. And that's simple as that.
That's a great way to play pro golf though. Like,
yeah, it is.
A solo fifth and a missed cut is better than two T45s. It really is.
It is. It is.
It absolutely, it's gotta be, that's gotta be a hard thing to learn. I would think of like
it mentally, it's a lot better to make a lot of cuts though.
I'm sure
you feel better about yourself, but from whenever you look back on the season, those fourths and fifths are the top tens are really all that matter.
All right, we'll keep hoovering up those points in those signature events now that you're in them. And we look forward to, we'll do this again down the road. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Yeah. Enjoyed it.
Cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most.
For FanDuel, you must be 21 and older or 18 and older in D.C. and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, D.C., Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.